My name is Ricky Inslee, and I'm the community manager for the USENIXX Association, and also help edit the magazines that Rick is the editor-in-chief, but I'm a sidekick. And we started this last year, this initiative, and I should give a little background on it. This is geared towards women in advanced computing. The topics are related to women in advanced computing. We won't be venting and sharing horror stories because that's not productive. This is more practical, discussing practical solutions and tips to help recruit women into advanced computing careers, to help new hires or young women right out of college, or older women right out of college, like some of us, and women who are already established in their careers move forward. And of course, it's obviously, I'm glad that we have a nice mix of people here, because we need everybody to be part of the solution and helping, you know, your colleagues and your friends and new hires. So I will let the other panelists briefly introduce themselves, and then I have a few questions to get us started, and then we will take questions from everybody out in the room. And please do go up to the mic, because we will be recording this, and you can go to our website and see the archives from the past events. We have open access. You don't have to log in or anything to watch those videos, so please do check those out too. Would you like to start?
Thanks. I'm Deirdre Strawn. I have been working in computing one way or another for about 25 years now on the intersect between the human and the machine sides, helping people communicate. So documentation, community management. I do a lot of video, which is where you, if you've heard of me, that may be one place you have. I am not and never have been an engineer nor a sysadmin, but I have worked with an awful lot of them, and I like to help them communicate to the rest of the world, and that's what's fun.
My name is Amy Rich. I've been doing Unix system administration for about 20 years now. I've worked at a variety of types of companies, and these days I'm actually a manager at Mozilla. My group handles the build and test environment for Firefox.
Hi, I'm Amy Fornesch. I started working at NASA 19 years ago. I was hired as a programmer, but they didn't have a system administrator, and I was the only one willing to read a man page. So I had sworn in college that I would never be a system administrator, because I knew a bunch of people who were and that didn't look like fun, but it turned out that I'm really good at it. So probably 18 years of the last 19 have been as a system administrator.
Hi, I'm Deanna McNeil. I think I'm also an accidental systems administrator, because I was had started on a different path in my career, stayed home when I had a child, and it was like I was always the only person who understood how to hook things up and how to make the blinky lights all, you know, work the way they're supposed to. So I've been doing that for the last 12 years, and what I've discovered is it's just this awesome venue for continuing to learn that keeps me there.
I think it's funny that both of you said you were accidental sysadmins, because I got my start in this field as an editor at Sysadmin Magazine quite a few years ago, and that's how I know Amy Rich. She was one of our columnists. But our t-shirts on the back said, systems administration, it's a dirty job, but somebody said I have to do it. So you're probably in good company. Okay, I wanted to start out with some career-related recruiting-type topics. So I guess somebody recently asked you this question, and it's a topic I discussed at OSCON this year in some articles, is how do you recruit women for these roles? You often hear there are only men on our team because those are the only people that applied, or those were the only qualified candidates, which is really weird when 50% of the population are women, you know? And so recruiters are taking more interest in what can they do to get the word out that they have positions and get a more diverse pool of applicants. So let's just go down the line. We'll start here, and if you could address some tips you have for recruiters on where to recruit or how to word, you know, their classified positions.
I'm not actually a technical recruiter myself, but I do have experience running events for technical people and trying to get attendees. For example, I actually do carry this bag habitually every day. This is from a Girl Geeks dinner in San Francisco, which was sponsoring Hackbright Academy, which is a code school, sort of a code boot camp exclusively for women. And what I discovered after that when I had an event to run was I tweeted to HackBright Academy and Girl Geeks Dinner in the Bay Area and said, hey, we're having this event and I'd love to see some women come. And we actually had quite a few women sign up. So I, you know, reach out to where the women are. There are also conferences. We were just talking about the Grace Hopper Celebration of Women in Computing, which is annual. And I went to Ada Camp this year, which is for women in open source. And I found that a very interesting conference, both for the content and for the breadth of people across the industry that I met. So if you are trying to recruit women, go to these events which are predominantly women.
So another thing that we look at Mozilla, when I started in IT, I was the only female. That was special. And I had known women from other jobs I had been at, and I recruited a bunch of them to come to Mozilla with me. And you find that the more women you have, the more women you get. Kind of like the old boys network, there is a girls network as well. And we talk about the culture and what it's like to work at your place of work and how you are treated and the respect you're given. And it's important to remember that many of us are technical people first. So if you treat us like technical people, we're much more likely to come to your company than if you go, ooh, you're a woman, we need women. And another thing is, I find it really depends on how you write your job descriptions. There are job descriptions that cater, especially in sort of high-tech Silicon Valley, I found, and in the financial district, they cater to very aggressive personalities. And some women have very aggressive personalities, but a lot of them don't. So if you use language that sounds very aggressive, you turn off a good portion of your audience if you're looking specifically for women.
I am a fan of Grow Your Own Sysadmin. I was hired after a summer internship program, and in the program, I at the end had to write a resume that had all the buzzwords for all the things I learned. And companies in the area were given copies of that resume. And so like 3 or 4 years later, I got a phone call at the crappy job I was working at saying, would you like a job at NASA? And I said, I don't even care what it is. Yes. So I would say that you should encourage that kind of program in your community or the communities you're interested in. If you want to be able to access young women, you should be supporting them by helping support the summer internship programs and then checking the summer internship programs that year or the year after to see if anyone in those programs actually meet your needs, and there's a good chance they will.
I have to agree with Deirdre about different organizations that do cater to women. I too have been part of Girl Geek Dinners here in this area in Washington, D.C. There's also the D.C. Web Women Group, which comprises, you know, web design and web things, but a lot of other technical people as well. And yeah, we stick together too, because you want to have people you can talk to. So it's a lot of times if you have one contact and you're really nice to them, they might help you get invited, or, you know, tell you where to go. But it also really is, as you approach your teams, it really makes a difference. Do you want to hear a different voice? If you're not approaching your hiring process even with that thought in mind, you're never going to get a different result. And having, you know, women on the team is definitely going to bring a different voice, a different perspective. And that's just something that, until you've really considered what do I want in, you know, in my new hires, you're not going to even consider how you're approaching it, even your own personal attitude in the interview room. So those are my thoughts.
The next question I was going to ask is related to generational and experience differences in the workplace, and maybe background differences from a management perspective. So any tips that you have on either managing up to a manager who is perhaps less experienced than you in your area, or as a manager, how do you manage somebody who might be older or have more experience in the field or more years in the field? Do you have any experiences with those to share, or tips? Sorry, good idea. We'll start with Amy.
Start with me, I'm the manager. Right. So most of the people who work for me are actually younger than I am at this point, but they don't know it. Most of them tend to think that I'm still in my 20s or my 30s, and I'm not. So I have a reasonably good rapport with them. The people I report to also think I'm younger than they are, but I'm not. So this is sort of a weird issue space for me. I've always managed up regardless of the age of the person above me, and I think that's a lot to do with communication and making sure that you have a good rapport with your boss and the people who report to you. As far as age specifically, there are some people above me that are in fact older than I am and have more experience, or who are not older than I am but have more experience as a manager, and I value their opinion and I let them know that. And it's important to listen to what they have to say. On the other hand, they're also looking for fresh ideas. So they also want to talk to the less experienced and or younger people. And it's a two-way flow of communication.
I can't really speak to the level of management above me because we're very separated. They don't really know what I do. However, when I was hired at 24, I was at least 10 years younger than everyone else in my office. And for some reason, because of the position I took, I was supposed to start doing their annual reviews, like the next month. So I picked up the style that I still have now, which is collaborative. I am not one to tell you what to do and yell at you for not doing it. I'm going to talk to you about what the solution is. We'll both figure out what the best way is to handle it, and then afterwards we will both evaluate what went wrong, what didn't, and what I as the manager can do to help you get your job done.
Yeah, I've not been a manager, but I have been the person who's always got to mentor. I don't know, I'm always that person. And I kind of like that, actually, because I get to help them grow without, you know, being the one that says, oh, this is a real problem, and now we have to deal with these consequences. But I think as a manager, if you're not successful in having that kind of relationship with your direct reports, so having someone like that on your team, which I have been for many years, can be really helpful. And so utilizing all those, you know, forces on your team can be really helpful, making a good whole.
I don't really have much management experience, and what I have had has been somewhat strange. The age thing, honestly, I am bad at telling people's ages. I don't really think about it much. So, my current direct report, the only one I have, is older than I am. And he's also, you know, I'm currently the head of educational programs at Joyent, which means I am managing training, among many other tasks. He's older than I am, much, much, much more experienced in training. So as far as his professional skills and job, I am never going to tell him how to do that, and he knows it. I'm just managing all the practical stuff, like filling up a course and arranging venues and so on. And so it's not a problem in that sense.
It's something I studied in grad school. I had to write papers on it from a business perspective, and in journalism in particular. But and then my area's always been journalism and tech. But I'm Gen X, you know, and so they've done a lot of studies about what we want versus what baby boomers want, and Gen Y wants. So we are in a very interesting time because we are working right in the middle of people, you know, who have completely different expectations about the workforce. I don't know what I expect because I'm in between them at this point, you know. So. I wanted to shift gears a little bit and talk about, in your career, how you can make sure that people are recognizing what you're doing and the issues that go with that. Deirdre had a good tip for a question to talk about, and someone else had mentioned this to me too, on how do you make sure people are aware of your success at work without coming off as pushy or bitchy or aggressive instead of assertive, you know, but you want to make sure people know what you've done. It's job security for you, you know, and so do you have any tips for that? We'll start with the other Amy.
I'm not a fan of being in the spotlights. This has been an issue for me. I feel like if I'm doing my job well, you won't notice that I've done anything. So that was a problem in the earlier part of my career, and what I started doing then was, if it started to look like the boss thought I wasn't busy, I would write him a list of everything I did. And the first time I did it, it came to 3 pages, and I handed it to him, and he read, and he read, and he read, and he's like, oh, I guess you're doing quite a lot. You really shouldn't have to do that. That means you've waited too long. So what I do now is, if I have something that is taking up a lot of my time, I let him know. I just write my boss an email saying, you know, I'm spending like 90% of my time on this Comet ISON thing. I just thought you should know that it's a much bigger deal than we thought it was going to be. I basically just bring to his attention the fact that, hey, I do stuff, and if I don't do it, your stuff's not going to work.
I do a lot of outside activities besides on the job mentoring. I've been involved with teaching kids programming and other kinds of events. And so I just actually tell people, I'm pretty tired today. This is what's going on this week, and it's been pretty exciting. And you'd be surprised. People are like, what is that? What do you mean? And then they have questions. And so I just make it a part of my conversation, even if I'm feeling a little on the inside about, because I'm not comfortable, you know, tooting my own horn or anything like that. But it does help to actually just say it. And just let people know what's going on. And my boss has actually over the years been very supportive, like, well, you know, if you're working on that, you know, this project end date is such and such, how can we work together? And it's, I've actually had him say that to me. So it helps to just go ahead and say it.
I did use Amy's list technique quite recently when I've had a change of management and my new managers weren't really aware of how much I was doing. And so I framed it as a checklist for, if you're going to organize a training course, here are all the different steps that go into it. By the time I finished it all, I was like, I'm actually doing a lot just for one course at a time. And so I made sure that my new management saw that. And the tone of the reply was kind of interesting. So I thought, okay, yeah, you're still trying to figure out whether to keep me or not, aren't you?
So I have imposter syndrome, like many people in the technical world. And like you, I hate being in the spotlight. So I approach this from a different perspective. I've worked at places where IT as a whole has a reputation issue. So instead of thinking this as I need to push myself out there and make myself recognized, I think IT needs a better reputation. So the way I do this is by building bridges between IT and other departments. And what I say to these people is, when we do good things in IT, you talk about them to your managers. When you do good things in your department, I will talk about them to my managers. And so we not only wind up hearing about what individual people are doing in each department, but we strengthen the company by making sure that the teams are in sync and know that we're working together.
Thank you for bringing up imposter syndrome. Is anybody who doesn't know what imposter syndrome is? Everybody's heard of it? Okay, well, I hadn't heard of it until a few years ago when I was told that I have it, and it's very common in academics in particular, and it's more common with women, but many men also have this, where you feel unqualified even though you might be more qualified than the people you're with, and you're afraid that people will figure out that you don't know what you're doing. Actually, I found that as a parent also. I interviewed Brendan Gregg last night, and then he keynoted today or did the plenary session, and he was telling me that his first talk was only back in 2010, which wasn't that long ago, and he had to be encouraged to give that talk. He didn't feel qualified, and then you see him today, and that's not much time, you know, and he obviously was very qualified. And public speaking has obviously been very successful for his career. This is an issue I've seen a lot, particularly with women who will not submit article proposals or talk proposals. I've been on speaker committees for several events, and you know, we would love to see more diversity, and we reach out and let people know there's a call for papers, you know, offer to mentor, and we still often see a low turnout. So what advice would you give to women or men who maybe aren't good at getting out there and networking via publishing articles or, you know, leading groups or giving talks? What advice would you give on, you know, how to get started or how to get over it? And we'll start down at the end now.
I would actually encourage private encouragement, because sometimes that one-on-one session is exactly what they needed to know. And you need someone to talk to them who's actually, listen, I know about your body of work, and let's just lay it out logically, fact, 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 fact. And a lot of times that helps break down those emotional, oh no, I can't do it. And then when you review the facts, it can be really helpful. So changing the way that invitation is sent out can actually be very helpful. That's been my personal experience in encouraging people to speak and participate in events.
I have two things. One, it's important to write down what you're doing, summarize it afterwards, make notes so the next time it happens, you don't have to redo your research. That helps you keep track of the things you're actually working on and the successes you've had. It's right there in writing already. Two, go to Toastmasters. Join a public speaking group. They will force you to very gradually and with a lot of support learn how to speak in public and not freak out. And in the course of that, you'll also learn how to put your thoughts together so you can write a paper. You'll start out with two paragraphs, learn how to think logically so you can write your speech, and then you'll learn how to actually speak it without passing out. The two things, one, actually being aware of what you're doing, and two, being able to tell other people are the key ingredients.
So I'm one of those people who hates public speaking. And I have people who work for me who are also in this predicament. And I just went through a storytelling class at work. And one of the things that they talk about, I mean, there's always fake it till you make it, which I'm sure everyone has heard. The same thing applies when you're public speaking. But the secret is hardly anyone is good at it when they start. It's practice. You write stuff down, you practice in front of the mirror, you practice in front of small groups, you practice in front of larger groups, you practice again. You have a good idea of what you're gonna say until it becomes a reflex. And then you get up on the stage and you talk. And it's easier for that reflex to take over as opposed to looking at your note cards and going, oh my God, what am I gonna say next? So that's one tip. And another one that I've done with someone who works for me, who was terrified of public speaking. And I said to him, also being terrified myself, I was like, we'll get up there and we'll do it together. And when you freeze, I'll talk. And when your brain unfreezes, you talk, and I'll have my moment of panic that no one else is gonna notice. So we got up there and I started talking. And he was having, you know, his panic attack over in the corner. And I did this purposely. We were talking about something technical and I said something wrong. And he jumped in and he's like, actually, it's really like this. And that completely broke his moment of panic and his freeze, because he was so interested in getting the technical information out there because he's very passionate about what he does. And after that, I just sat back and he went with it for the rest of the talk.
I like that. The story behind Brendan's Greg first talk at LISA in 2010 was that the CFP was kind of closing in, and I do this for all the engineers and other technical people at Joyent, and I did it before with Sun, is tracking conferences that are coming up. When's the CFP closing? Here's the topics. Hey, I think you might be good, or put out a general call. And I was encouraging Brendan to apply for LISA. He said, oh, I don't know. I'm not really that, you know, I'm not that famous. I'm not that qualified. And I actually wrote email for him. And I said, because I'd been working with USENIX with Sun, and so I knew some people here like Camille. And so I sent Camille this email. I said, look, here's this guy. Here's his qualifications. Here's some stuff he's done that I happen to have videotaped. What do you think? 15 minutes reply from the committee, yes, we want him. And he just had no idea that that could happen. And so I've done, you know, I do it with the younger engineers and less experienced ones at Joyent. We've gotten them out to a few conferences. And by now, conference organizers come to me expecting me to find people. So that's become pretty easy to do for me. And I would encourage you, if you yourself, you know, and for me, this is also, an, you know, I also have some imposter syndrome here, and I don't have that much experience being on this side of the camera. So I, you know, I bounce ideas off people, and people encourage me, and you know, like Brendan goes through my talks with me and says, well, what about this and this and this? So have somebody who helps you and encourages you, and do that for each other. And it just, it helps you validate that your ideas are good, that this is going to present well, that, you know, who's the audience and so forth. And that can just be a tremendous help to each other. And this is one of the ways in which I think we can all, both men and women, support each other in these kinds of advancements. And that also goes for things like blog posts and, you know, articles, what have you. You know, all of us who are pretty geeky and technical tend to underplay and understand our own skill levels, because we are comparing ourselves to the giants in our field, who are the 1% of the 1%. We are all very smart people, and we all have a lot to contribute. So help each other not to be intimidated and to get out there, because there's lots of room for more.
I'd like to add that you should speak about something you love or that you feel expert on, even if it's a tiny, tiny subsection of the field, because you don't have to memorize a speech. All you have to say is, I'm going to talk about all the ways that you need to lock down OS X so it's as secure as other operating systems, and I can just go on about that for half an hour. Your speech should be something that you don't really have to think about.
Just a minute, please. And this topic has always been very interesting to me, because I didn't realize that I didn't know what it was, and then I didn't realize how bad I have it. And I was lucky to have a mentor who kind of, I don't want to say forced me to, but heavily encouraged me to start speaking at events, which I did not want to do. And the first one I actually spoke at was SCALE, the Southern California Linux Expo. And they have a booth here, and they do still have their call for papers open. I don't get paid for telling you that. But I highly recommend it if you're interested. It's a really inviting event, and there are many other community events like that, too, that are great for your first time. But Lisa, obviously, is also good, so don't overthink that one, because the call for papers is open for Lisa, the preliminary call for papers, and we will be doing this WIAC panel again next year, so if you're interested, please let us know about that. And I see that we already have a question. If you want to go ahead and go up to the mic and ask it so we can hear you, that'd be great.
Another good way to get started, I'd say, is to also look for local meetups. And or even if you, like within my company, I have scope to organize meetups and give people opportunities to speak. So look for things like that as well.
How do you make your voice heard when you feel like those that are around you don't value, even though you've proven yourself over and over again?
I'm glad you asked that, because that was on my list also, because a friend recently said that she and two male colleagues all worked on a project, and somebody came up and gave all of the credit to the other colleagues, and she had actually done the brunt of the work, and she was asking a group of women, how do you even address that, you know? So thank you for bringing that up. Anyone have some suggestions there?
I have a chronic problem that the things I tend to do in any given job are so spread out across things that aren't really well defined as part of any job description, that I am often more appreciated outside my company than inside it, and that has gone for many companies I've worked for. So again, look for outside opportunities. I did a talk a few weeks ago at Monktoberfest on marketing your tech talent, and as I wrote the talk, I realized this was something I've actually been doing across the course of my last three jobs for about 7 years, and every single time I run up against a marketing organization, I have to explain to them what this is and why I think it's important, and they don't always get it. So I went and found an audience that wanted to hear about it, and they loved it.
So for me, this also goes back to strengthening the groups. I make sure that I have advocates. And when we're in discussions, and usually it's the other way around for me, I'm the one standing up for other people because I have no problem making my opinion known. If somebody else is trying to speak and they're not being heard, I sometimes will stop the meeting or stop the conversation and I say, hey, I was talking with so-and-so and I know they have this great idea, how about we listen to them? And if there's a response, you know, where somebody shoots that down out of hand, I say, well, we should really give that some thought, you know, let's discuss the merits of that. And it's really important to have that sort of alliance in your group with other people. And it doesn't have to be just one person, it can be multiple people. And it's good if it's men and women. You do it for each other so that it works in multiple situations.
I have a few friends who will do that, will jump in for each other and will say, I think what Alex was trying to say was, and we'll restate it in different words, or I think what Amy was trying to say, and they don't necessarily understand because it's super technical, but they'll try, and it gets the attention of the others when it happens twice. I had Cassandra syndrome going on at my job. I would say, this is going to happen, and it's going to be a problem, and I would just be ignored. And it happened a few times, But you know, when that happens enough times, people start to realize, oh, I should have listened. Next time I'm going to listen. That takes time. It takes building up a reputation, but it does work. If you're just right all the time, sooner or later, people realize they should listen when you speak.
Sounds like the premise of a zombie movie. Why didn't we listen to her? Oh, I'm sorry. But it is actually, it does go a long way when you develop that kind of relationship actually with your colleagues, where they want to stand up for you just as much as they see you making sure they get due credit. There's a lot to be said for that, even if someone else who didn't have a good view has a different perception.
And I would also say, be the kind of coworker that you want your coworkers to be for you. Be supportive.
And another thing, if you find that you aren't being heard the way you state something, try reframing it with your audience in mind. It may be that it's not clicking for them, however you are saying it. They may be at a different level. It may be market, it may be the CEO, it may be somebody technical, and you're trying to speak on a different level. So if you reframe your discussion to the level that they're used to, that may be easier for you to be heard.
Also, I would try recording yourself. Ask yourself a question, then answer it. Do you answer it like this? Or do you go, well, I'm not sure if this is right, but, or do you giggle, or do you just flat out state it? Like, this is what I think the answer is. Don't denigrate yourself. Don't act like you don't know what you're talking about. Just say it.
I think once you know that you have imposter syndrome, or that you know you have issues with putting yourself out there, and you are aware of it, then you can start working on it. In my case, knowing it was 90% of the battle for me, and you know, I can force myself to go ahead and put myself out there. But now I've kind of created my own monster, because I got to tour the West Wing, and I was in the press room the other day, and I was like, I could totally do this, you know? I was like, I'm going to sit here and see how this feels. I think I could rock it.
You totally could.
if you're thinking about doing your first talk, I will say a book that I also don't get paid for saying this, Confessions of a Public Speaker by Scott Berkin. I highly recommend it. Easy read, very practical, solid advice to help you give a good talk. On the note that we were on, though, as far as promoting yourself, another friend of mine, a professional in the tech field, just this week was asking for advice on writing a bio. She said, I've been told not to be too braggy, and now I don't know what to put in there. We were all like, what? That's what a bio is, you know? And so I don't know that men ever hear that, you know, that don't be too braggy or whatever. And so I was wondering if you have thoughts on differences like that, that you, it's a small thing, it's a subtle thing, but I don't think that maybe some of your colleagues are dealing with these things and they don't notice it. And have you noticed anything like that, or how women dress? If you see an article written about a successful woman in tech, it always starts with how she looks, and it's rare that you hear that about a guy, you know? So any examples?
Well, as far as the bio goes, again, Brendan is my go-to use case and example. The publisher contacted him yesterday and said, well, I guess we have to change the bio that's on the back of the book now. And so the publisher had given him this bio, and Brendan's like, oh, I don't know, is that a little too braggy? Partly because he is Australian, and in Australia they have what they call tall poppy syndrome, which is if you stand up too much above your peers, they all want to cut you off. So he is instinctively very reticent about taking claim of some of his capabilities. So I've written bios for him, and that's also another area where you can help each other. Is it's much easier for us to brag about our friends than about ourselves. So, you know, help each other and say, well, no, you know, you actually did this and this and this, and that should be in your bio.
So one of the things that I try to do to deal with the imposter syndrome is every year I update my resume. And I hate updating my resume, because it sounds like I am blowing my own horn, and I never believe half the stuff I put on there. But I give that to my boss, and he says, but you forgot this. I'm like, oh, right. All right, I'll put that in there too. And then I distill my bio from that. And if people look at my bio, it sounds like some superstar, and I think that's not me at all. But if I talk to the people I work with, they're like, yeah, that's totally what you do, and that's the kind of stuff you do. So I always need that external reality check that says, I don't think I'm this, and everyone else does. Well, if it's my job, it's what everyone else's opinion is that really counts when it comes to getting stuff done in the company and my pay raise and being effective.
I have seldom had a reason to write a bio, so I don't have good advice here. However, I will say that updating your resume annually is a really good idea.
I just have to say I love this panel, because when I saw everybody else's bio, I thought, I really sucked at writing my bio. But, you know, that's in that moment when I was writing it, that's who I was. But yeah, it is really helpful actually to talk to others and get a third party view. What do they see? Because it is sometimes hard to get out of your head, and it's not just women, but we do particularly suffer from that because we do have, I don't know, we just do that.
I think the idea of floating it past other people is great. I worked with a production editor on SysAdmin magazine quite a few years ago, and when she was job hunting after that, she sent her resume to me and asked me to proofread it, and I rewrote it and sent it back because I was like, you left off this and this, you need to say that you designed and launched this, and she emailed me back and she was like, I am awesome. She had no idea. I mean, she just did not know. And this, I didn't lie. I didn't, you know, make it flowery or whatever. It was all true, you know, and she just didn't see the importance of that stuff or how good it looks on paper. So that's a great tip. I'd like to go ahead and open it up for questions. And please do come up to the microphone, and you can form a line there if there's multiple people. But we do want to have it in the mic so we can get it recorded for posterity.
I want to bring you greetings from Liz Crumbach. She wishes she could be here, but she's off representing HP at the CloudStack conference. And I am actually the person who followed her up at LinuxForce. I'm a Gen Xer. I'm on my fifth, seventh, whatever career. And back when the dot-com bubble burst, I decided to go off and get what turned out to be an English degree. So I have just been re-entering the tech field as of the last 2 years. I got a temp gig on a help desk, and then I got hired by LinuxForce. And as you can see, my hair is gray. I don't have a 40-year career in front of me. And people probably would look at me and think I'm more experienced a system administrator than I am. How do you deal with those sort of expectations from age and skill, and you know, just defining a little more focus for, you know, getting myself up to where I might expect myself to be?
I think that's a great question, and I actually don't think you're in an unusual position. I think there are a lot of us who look at career changes, you know, around this point in our lives. So, what experiences do you all have with that?
I haven't changed careers. However, I've had plenty of people ask me to do stuff that I don't know how to do. And I say, I don't know how to do that. And people are actually very appreciative when you just come out and say, I don't know how to do that, instead of, you know, trying and screwing it up. So I try to follow that up with either, I'll go figure it out, or I know a guy or a woman who knows how to do that. Let me get you in touch with them. But if you are upfront from the very beginning of, I don't know how to do that, that means they're going to trust you when you say, I know how to do that.
So a comment I have on that, we undervalue ourselves and our knowledge. So I would posit that you probably know more than you say you do upfront. And for those things that you don't know, as Amy says, you can be upfront about that and say, you know what, that's a really great question. Let me go find the answer. And I will put a plug in here for the LOPSA mentorship program. We try and pair up more experienced people with less experienced people. And that doesn't always mean that the experienced people are going to be gurus. It may just mean that they're two steps ahead in their career. And you want to know how to set up LDAP. And they've done it before. Or you may be changing a career and they've done it before. Or you want to know what certs that you should get to make yourself look marketable, and they can help you out with that. So it's good to have, I have like three people I can go to at any time, and for different aspects of my career. If it's something technical, you know, I'll talk to one person. If it's something management related, I'll talk to another. And I've recently sort of picked up a business mentor because that's now sort of part of my job. So all these different people I can go to and I can say, I have this problem. This is how I think I should approach it. You know, what's your input there? Am I on the right track? Should I be doing something different? But I always go to them with something in mind, saying, I think I should do this. Give me a reality check. Let me know where to go next.
Oh, and one other comment I'd add is while you're doing what they just said to do on the outside, on the inside, remind yourself of the fact that you have done 5 or 6 other careers. I guess you're pretty competent, so you can probably do this too.
I would also just add, flipping the mentor thing, every teacher knows that the fastest way to learn something is to teach it.
Mm-hmm. And don't ever underestimate the value of networking, particularly if you're switching into areas or switching fields. And there are many ways to do that. There are online groups, there are local groups, you know, there are online email lists, and volunteering at conferences, I think, is a really great way to get your foot in the door, you know, particularly if it's local or if it's an event you wanted to go to that you couldn't afford to go to. It's very helpful, and you get all kinds of access to people, you know, that become friends or mentors or job leads or employers, you know. So that's another thing I'd recommend.
Also, I would say when you do know that you need help and you need to go to somebody to ask, don't be afraid to, because as human beings, we all love to be asked to help. We all love to feel that we are able to be useful. I mean, if we're not sociopaths, that we are able to help someone else. And in a sense, it puts us in an obligation to the person who's asking. So don't be afraid to ask.
The sisters email list, if you're not on there, is one I would recommend because these are the kind of questions. It's private, and I think you have to be a woman to be on the list, and you have to be in technology. And, you know, it's all practical help on career stuff. How do I, you know, do this, or what should I put on this part of my resume, and that sort of thing. Do we have some other questions?
Hi, my name is Jessica. I'm from University of California, San Diego. And my job is to do technical outreach. I run a LISA, Campus LISA event on campus. I love my job. I love doing technical outreach. I get to have beer every week with sysadmins. It's wonderful. And I get paid for that. That's really awesome. But what I found is that some of the events that I do, like the weekly beer meetup, I don't get any women. And I really want to subversively do a lot more outreach to the women on campus, because we do have women sysadmins and we do have women developers, but they tend not to come to social events. I would love some advice on how to get more women to attend social events, to do more networking, because I can't have sisters in technology if the sisters don't show up. So I would just love some advice on that.
I know that one reason women don't show up to tech events is because there is such an overwhelming preponderance of men at them, and they sometimes just feel intimidated. I don't know if people are afraid they're actually going to be harassed necessarily, but it's just you feel overwhelmed. So try getting a group of 2 or 3 or 4 and getting them to come together.
Another approach might even be to have one that's women's to begin with, you know, or just for women so that they can network and then go as a group, you know, and that might be another approach to try.
The beer would have totally worked for me. I'll say that we tend to respond well to being asked if we're needed. So you could say, I need 5 women to get together to help me with X problem. And after they've met with you, they might decide, oh, I would like to do that again because that was fun. But appealing to the side that likes to be useful might be a good way to go.
And then for the rare people who don't like beer, just have something else.
Coffee.
So I try to incentivize these sort of things. It can be anything from this will look really good on your resume to maybe you will find your next job here. Because a lot of people don't necessarily want to socialize just for socializing, and there has to be a reason for it. So if you can figure out what that reason is for the women in your group, it's easier to reach out to them.
Anyone else have some questions?
Thanks, guys. I think there's been some amazing advice today and some really good comments. I think after a period of time on Wall Street, which I think you guys have called quite an aggressive environment, two things have shown themselves to be really true. One is the power of mentoring, and I think it's excellent you guys brought it up. The second is the value of feedback, right? And you talked about that. And I just wanted to supplement that with a comment, which is, and whether it's male or female or just one type or another type, in my experience, there are really two ways that people take feedback. One is you tell somebody a bunch of good things, and then you talk about some issues and things that we want to work through, and all they hear is the issues. The good things are irrelevant. You can say an entire page worth of, you've done great, but here's one small thing I want you to change, and all they hear is, oh my God, I'm a terrible human being. The other side of the coin is you say, listen, you're really not doing that well. We really need to focus on your work. Oh, by the way, thanks very much for getting that report in last week. And all they hear is, I'm doing great, and they're high-fiving on the way out. The reality is taking feedback is as much about listening to it and putting it in perspective and taking away all of it in totality rather than just taking away the bits that you want to hear. And I do feel that quite often the women that we've found who've become successful have managed to master that skill of taking the whole picture rather than just the bit that is the negative feedback, which is the bit I think, it's not just men and women, but it is the bit that I think we all prefer to take because we all like to work on ourselves.
I totally agree with that, and it's something I have to talk myself down from. You have to be able to take the criticism, but as in a management position or even as a colleague, if you are going to do that, you have to make sure you're also giving some positive feedback, because if all somebody ever hears is negative, then it's not going to work. Do we have any other questions?
Yay, Morty.
Couple things. First off, any advice to men, either as coworkers or as leads or managers?
Well, thanks for coming, because I think you're already, making positive steps by, listening and asking questions like that. So that's a good one. Good start.
This isn't actually a male versus female thing necessarily, mm-hmm. but several people have already commented on, like Amy especially, on making sure that all the voices in a meeting, for example, get heard. Because some of us have a speaking style where we tend to, we get excited about the point that they're making and we rush ahead and we finish it for them. And people who culturally or by reason of their personality have trouble breaking into a conversation may never get heard. So it can be good to be a very active moderator who says, well, we haven't heard from so-and-so yet, or no, wait, this person needs to finish their point. And I know personally I suck at that, so I always appreciate it when people do that.
Morty, you're actually a great example of what I'm going to say, which is that when you encounter a woman in the course of your work and she has a question or something that would require input from you, treating her like a real human being who understands what you're saying is a great way to encourage.
And I'd also like to add, paying attention to one another's communication skills and strengths and even their weaknesses. I have a coworker who is awesome about paying attention and being respectful and all that kind of thing in a meeting, but outside of the meeting, that person will not turn their head to look at you. You're not even sure if there's actually stopped typing, and he's actually apologized to me, oh, I really need to work on this. So I've also had to pay better attention. Well, maybe I should just wait till it's literally 12 o'clock on the clock, so that he can feel comfortable breaking away, turning his head from the monitor. So, each of us, by learning to be more respectful of one another's communication habits can go a long way to encouraging and maintaining good communication.
I think men can do a lot of the things that we're talking about that women can do to help each other also. If you're going to meeting on campus, for example, you can invite your female colleagues to go with you because that would, make it a little less intimidating knowing that, they're with somebody they know. My personal experience, I've had quite a few mentors in my career. Three of the biggest mentors for me have been men. And one of my former employers, who is the CEO of Linux New Media, back when I was at Linux Pro Magazine, when I first started there, after we would have conference calls, we all hung up, he would call me back and go, why didn't you talk on the call? Why didn't you speak up? Why are you telling me this stuff on our private calls, but then you're not speaking up on the conference calls? And that wasn't a criticism. I mean, that really helped me in my career, And he's the one that encouraged me to start blogging.
He's the one that encouraged me to speak at an event. You know, Joe Brockmeyer, who's down at the Fedora booth, I've known him for years. He is the one that's encouraged me to write articles that I wouldn't have thought or submit proposals. And that stuff you can do, you know, regardless of whether you're helping a female colleague or a male colleague. You know, you can help a shy colleague or somebody who really doesn't do a good job of promoting themselves, you know, that sort of thing.
So one of the things as a manager that I've learned in my short tenure is that part of my job is to point out to you the things that you are good at. Because a lot of people don't understand the things that they're good at. They're so focused on this project that they're working on, the minutiae of this, and they don't understand that, you know what, you also write really good technical documentation, which may not be anything related to the current project that they're working on, but just hearing encouragement and good feedback, there's always the sort of negative self-perpetuating cycle of you hear bad things, you get worse, you hear bad things, you get worse. It also works in reverse. If you hear good things about yourself, you get more confidence and you do better and you stretch more.
Second item, thanks guys. And in particular, I formerly in my last job had three female direct reports who tended to write very good status reports and when nobody else did, and I was always wondering about that, so thanks in particular.
So I had a comment and a question. Something else men can do, geekfeminism.org has an amazing wiki that gives you a really good outline of sort of what the issues are in feminism and particularly with regards to geeks, I guess, as you would say. Take some time and read through it and understand the issues and understand, you know, how you can act in support of women in technical fields. I think, you know, obviously you're here, so you're not averse to taking some time to learn about the issues, and I think that's a great way to continue to learn about it. My question is, this year the panel is a little different in that many of you are not managers or do not have managerial expertise. And in years past, when I've made the call to, you know, to get speakers for the panel, I've gotten a lot of responses that are, well, I manage sysadmins, is that okay? And it seems like within systems administration, women get promoted very, very quickly to managers, and there's sort of this technical vacuum of women who are still doing hard tech as sysadmins. I don't know that I have a cohesive question about that. I was just wondering if you guys could sort of comment on that situation and how it's played out in your experience.
I refused. I was not interested in being a manager. I knew what their jobs were like, and when management positions have been offered to me, I said, no, thank you. I'd really rather continue being a nerd.
Me too. I tell my managers how they should do it this way and that way, but your call, man. I'm not the manager. Don't want to be. It's not my strength. It's not my gift. And yet I do understand these things like really, really well. Yeah, I don't want it.
So I used to be that. And I had a manager who was never in the country and was never reachable. And my personality is such that when things are being dropped on the floor and when there's a power vacuum, I will step in and I will pick things up because I cannot stand to see them not done or done wrong. So that worked really well for me as a system administrator. And I wound up doing two jobs at once. I was being a system administrator and I was being a manager. And the director at the time sent out email on a Friday after I'd been doing this for roughly 9 months. And he said, let me know if there's any corrections before I send this out. And I read the email message and it said I was being promoted to manager. And I called my boss, who was in Germany at the time, and I said, get your butt on the phone, we need to talk. And I didn't really want to be a manager because I really liked being a system administrator. But what I realized was another one of my gifts is that I can relate to people very well and I can explain things to them on their level, and I'm a very good motivator. So that also makes me good management material as well as technical team lead material. And what my team needed at the time was somebody to take the helm. We could find more technical people easier than we could find good managers. And so here I am. I may not stay a manager forever. I may go back into the technical field. But for right then, that's what I needed to do.
Actually, Speaking, keep in mind, I am someone who has never been a sysadmin or written a line of code beyond HTML, but I've been wondering about this in our own organization, but more broadly, is you hear that, you know, women coders get promoted into management and then they no longer code, and then you may start to have a respect gap where the coder's like, well, you don't code, so, you know, and people tend not to understand or appreciate the human management skills that go into that. And it's also part of the reason we lose women out of the direct technical jobs. Is it possible to do a bit of both? And I know that, you know, sysadmin coding, those are extremely demanding intellectually, but I'm kind of wondering, is there some model we can go to where people, or where you could share out the managerial and HR parts of being a team leader to somebody who isn't technical necessarily, so that you can still do technical stuff and do the technical team lead kinds of stuff and the management gets done, as something in this model, it seems to me, is breaking down.
That's basically the way we do it at NASA, what you just said.
And I would have to agree, a lot of organizations do make the mistake of promoting people into a management position when their gift really is in technology. Let them be a senior technologist in that and go down that track. But a lot of organizations don't think that way.
So in a previous job I was in, I was in a situation where the manager had left, and I was probably the most senior technical person. And even if I wasn't, the path led to my door whenever there were technical questions. And we also had a project manager. And the deal that we made, I was asked if I would step up as the manager, and I said, hell no, I will never be a manager. And that didn't work out well for me in later, but at the time I said, I don't want to be a manager, I'm doing system administration and that's what I really love. And they approached me and I said no. And then they approached the project manager and she said, yeah, sure, I can manage, but everybody goes to Amy. So we worked out a deal where she would do the one-on-ones and she would do the hire fire stuff, and I would do all of the technical lead stuff. And that actually worked out really well for the time that we did it.
Next question, please.
This isn't a question, it's more of a comment. So I do management for a living. I'm also a system administrator and I manage people. And you know, I've been listening to all these people here, and all of the people that I manage are men. They're all men. And you know, I'm listening to everybody up here and I'm thinking we're very focused on changing ourselves. And I don't think a lot of men would give that a second thought. They wouldn't give it a second thought. They, you know, many of the men that I work with, that I manage, are people who have done technical work basically since they were very young. They're extremely confident. And, you know, you look around here and you look at the women who are here. Check out the women who are here versus the women at the pharmacy convention down the hall. I mean, just, you know, we are older. You know, this is a tough business. It is a tough, tough, tough business. A tough business for women. Very tough. You know, you don't find many people who do what we do. And when, you know, there are very few women, and so you have to be incredibly tough, incredibly definite about what you need from other people and what, you know, they can rely on from you. You know, just that's just a comment. Also, I think that as far as leadership goes in this field, there are strengths that women really have that they can use to move themselves into a management position. I think we tend to be big picture thinkers. We tend to, you know, a lot of the men who work for me, they love the deep dive. They love, you know, going in and making things work, but they don't necessarily have the big picture skills. You know, where are we moving with this? What are we going to do next? What do we have to do next year? How am I going to report to management? All those kinds of questions that I think women can really be good at. The other thing is, I think that women tend to be better communicators. And you can use all those strengths to be in sort of a management position and really do well at it. But I happen to do both. I do both the technical work and the management. So anyway, just a comment.
Thank you for saying that. I hear what you're saying, particularly about, you know, what we can do versus, you know, that we're always talking about how we can change our behavior or whatever, you know, prepare ourselves. You know, obviously, there are plenty of men in the field, though, who are interested and willing to change their behavior, too, and want to be aware of what they can do to help. A couple of years ago, I've been in this field since my daughter was an infant. She's 17 now. And a couple of years ago, she took a programming class and was the only girl in her class. And that was fine. I'd prepared her for that sort of thing, you know, but then she got harassed and teased and whatever in class. And I was like, I have spent a good chunk of my career writing about what women could do, what girls could do. And I put a tweet out. I was like, how are you raising your son? So, you know, because if my son was doing that to a girl in class, you better believe that would be the last time, you know? So thank you for bringing that up. Anybody have anything to add to that?
I would just say that it's not always a guy thing. There are cultural things, there are personality things, you know, that a few years ago some article came out as, is Asperger's the hidden secret of the tech industry? I'm like, hidden? You know, so a lot of us are out there, you know, whether you want to call it spectrum, whether you want to call it geeks, you know, we don't all have the greatest interaction skills, emotional intelligence, whatever the latest buzzword is. So we all at an intellectual level, I think, recognize that we need to be sensitive to each other. So even if we aren't good at the gut reaction to, you know, this person might be upset or this person might get mad, we can think that through intellectually, and it's men and women. And I think we just have to be patient with each other's styles and try to recognize our own styles. And, you know, I've been told I'm very confrontational and emotional. I was like, thank you for that information. You know, so helping each other and ourselves to become self-aware, it's not just men. But, you know, don't expect the guys to be the only ones to change their behavior. Guys, don't expect women to always adapt to your behavior. Again, it's all about understanding each other, or at least trying hard to.
I've been told aggressive and intimidating quite a bit. And I told my daughter a few months ago, I said, yeah, since you were little, I always said she's going to be a great leader or a horrible dictator. And she's like, that's so true.
So I also get the intimidating thing, which is really funny until you get to know me, and then you find out I'm not really all that intimidating at all. But to your point, I find that I am a role model for the men in my company. A lot of them come to me and they say, how should I act around women? And I'm like, well, how about like an adult? I mean, you know, be yourself, but be cognizant that there are other adults around you and they like to act like adults a lot of the time. And I understand that occasionally you like locker room humor, and so do I. So when the two of us are together, we're all about the locker room humor. But not everyone is like me. We're all different. And some of the guys don't like the locker room humor either. So you have to make sure that you know who you're around and who your audience is before you stick your foot in your mouth by saying something inappropriate.
I've been the girl, like, since elementary school. And being kind of in the spectrum is nice, because I was completely oblivious that things might be different for girls than for boys. I really didn't so much notice the number of penises versus vaginas in the room. I'm just like, I know the answer. So the sort of people who might go into system administration actually have kind of an advantage in that way, because they're not going to be like, I'm not being supported. They're like, I'm just doing my thing. I wrote some code, is my feeling.
I just wanted to concur. I do agree, this is a tough business. Because if you're juggling, you know, raising a family and you're the one who has to show up at 2 a.m. because something's bad wrong, it can be really challenging. But I think it's definitely worthwhile. I think for anyone who chooses that profession, they stay because they enjoy the challenge.
short, sorry. So basically going to what she was saying before, there you are. One thing that I'm realizing is a lot of it has to come from the way I was raised to be in this technology field. My father was in the military, so the computer, when it was at home, I was the one in charge of it. My mother knew nothing. And a lot of times, females are raised to be, you know, emotional or motherly or those type of things. So that's why there's a lot of people in pharmaceuticals and things like that, because it's an emotional driven field. But whereas in technology, it's more so whoever is kind of right or wrong, whatever the right answer is. And from my father, he always told me whenever I walked in the door, I'm always gonna have three strikes against me, so I better make the second batter up very well. And I think it's a lot of times for the females that are growing up in this industry, they're growing up to be pretty, they're growing up to look at beautiful things and not necessarily growing up to be technical minded. So I definitely understand where you're coming from as far as like when you're around a lot of males and me wanting to go into a management track in project management and IT. I'm very like concerned to hear about like how the males are accepting of somebody who's in technology as a female and wanting to take orders, because a lot of times, you know, whoever has the hardest rock is the one that basically they understand and know better than when you don't have, you're not equipped with a rock. They definitely don't want to really understand or hear what you're saying, or sometimes that's why I asked the question before, because it's like when I'm saying something, it may not, it's not the fact that I may not be saying it to them where they don't understand, it's they don't care. It's like, blah, 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 is what you are. And then when they turn on the volume when you're talking to another male, then it's, oh, I hear the words in English. Mm-hmm. So I guess the comment that I have is more so of, you know, families, raise your daughters not to just look at Britney Spears and maybe open up a book and, you know, as far as like the managing part, I definitely would want to know more, or at least talk with you if I can afterwards, about like how you're feeling as far as having to manage all males or such a male-driven society where you know you may not be taking, I guess, being appreciated for having that broad spectrum of understanding, whereas versus, you know, coding and that's it. So.
Thank you.
I love your father. My dad did a lot more of the raising of me in practical skills than my mom did. My mom is very touchy-feely, liberal arts kind of person. My dad had me soldering when I was 5. So I think it makes a huge difference if you grow up comfortable with technical skills and you think they're normal.
Yeah, I did erector sets and all that other stuff.
I've been a single mom for a good chunk of the time raising my child and my daughter, and so she has seen me do plumbing and, you know, all the tech support in the house, and I've taken her to multiple tech events, took her to Federated Conferences Week, to one of the WIAC sessions, OzCon, and so I think we'll see more of that. You know, there are quite a few fathers in this field who are taking their kids, you know, and so I think that we'll get there. It's just taking a while.
Next question. Oh, sorry.
Go ahead.
I wanted to reiterate your point. Raise your boys to have respect for women. You guys were talking about, you know, how your father showed you stuff. I sort of got into the technical world because my father was incompetent when it came to anything mechanical. So if I got a bicycle for Christmas, I put it together. It doesn't matter that I was 5. It's like, give me the manual. I will put things together. It is done. And I can't remember the article I was reading, but it was an interview with several young women who had gone into the computer field who were successful. And the thing that they said that really struck me is the people who make it in this field are the ones that learn not to care what other people think. It's the people who are more interested in making a difference and getting their job done and not what everyone else is thinking about them and what they should be doing and what they should know.
So I'd like to invite your comments on a situation where if you have several job opportunities in front of you and you're seeking a new job, And, you know, they're kind of fairly equal in terms of opportunity, pay, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So it might come down to a company culture question. What sort of things would you each look for in a company's culture and ethos to make them attractive to work for?
So the first thing I look for, do you have flexible hours? Can I work from home? I don't have kids, so that's not really my problem, but I know a lot of people, men and women, both look for that, because in IT, I spend probably a good 70% of my day in front of that computer, and there are times when I need to go to the grocery store or I need to mow the lawn, and it's great if I can do those things, like when the grocery store is open or when it's light outside. So it's important to me that the company culture is results-driven. And another one is when I interview with your company, so I'm just looking at the job description at this point, right? I haven't actually interviewed with you. When I talk to the recruiter, I ask the recruiter, how many women are already in your company? What sort of benefits do you have? What do you have for maternity and paternity leave? Again, I don't have children. I don't really care. What I'm looking for is that the company has a culture that is supportive of other women, because I don't always want to work with all guys. I mean, I like working with guys. I get along really well with guys. But I also want women in there because we bring a different perspective when it comes to both technical and management. So I want to make sure that even if it's stuff I personally don't want, that the company is going to support those things.
I was just going to mention that wellness is actually something that's really important to me. So it includes like that balance of can you work from home and those flex hours, but also the kinds of benefits sometimes also demonstrate their interest in just giving you enough, or is there actually a genuine interest? Because when you're at your best, then you're going to produce your best. And are they interested in supporting me as a human being to be my best? That usually is very indicative of their entire approach.
Another thing I look for is training and where I can grow in either the technical contributor or the management track. It's kind of obvious if there's a glass ceiling in one or the other when you start talking to people at the company. And of course, I always make sure that I Google stalk people in the company. I'm always amazed when people go, oh my God, you Googled them? Who doesn't when they're looking for a job or looking to hire someone? So expect that that's going to be the case and be aware of what your employees are saying.
I agree with what you're saying on flex time is key for me and always has been. I was fortunate to start my career with a job that had flex time. And so at this point, I don't think I could do a 9-to-5. Actually, I tried it briefly. I didn't last long. It's just, I don't think it's a good fit for me. And then opportunities for training or to move around within a company, because I get bored if I'm not always picking up new skills.
I would add on the Google stalking that I would be looking at more than just the male-female ratio, but also other kinds of diversity, partly because I just prefer to work in a more diverse environment, but also because I think it's a healthier company when you have more perspectives.
I've been at NASA for 19 years. I can't really contribute to looking for a new job.
What in NASA culture makes it attractive to you then?
It's NASA, man. No, honestly,
okay, it's hard to beat rockets.
Being a woman there has not been a plus or a minus. It's just we are all nerds together, basically. We don't make eye contact in the halls, and we're all great with that. It's plus, I happen to work on a nice wooded campus, and I love the outdoors, so I like the fact that when my brain gets tired, I go for an hour's walk in the woods. So if anyone is looking for a job, NASA is actually a fantastic place to work.
Well, plus, you've got the coolest job in the universe.
It is rocket science.
So I'll tell you one more thing I look for. If you have a campus culture and you're a bunch of programmers, that's an immediate red flag. I don't want to be in an environment where there is an expectation that I'm going to eat my meals with you, that I'm going to do my laundry there, and that I'm going to go to the gym there, and that I'm going to sleep under my desk.
I actually love it that it hasn't just been one company. I'm a contractor, and I've lost track of how many companies it's been, but I like to hike, and a short hike for me is 100 miles, so I love it when my company is understanding that I need 2 weeks off, and I'm not going to be in contact because there's no cell phone coverage.
Thank you. That was a good question.
Thanks very much. Hi. One of the things we've convinced our HR people to do as part of the recruitment process is to strip out names and genders from applications. But what we found is the people who are writing job descriptions are HR people. We give them a list of skills that we're looking for. They write the ads. And they're still writing the ads in a way that encourages more men to apply. How can I get them to stop writing ads that, you know, make it seem like we're looking for the more aggressive, more obviously almost alpha male personality types?
So the first thing is, have you pointed this out to them that they're doing it?
Yes.
Have you pointed them towards articles that tell them how not to do it?
Not yet.
That's a good next step, is to actually suggest language that they could use to make it sound like, we aren't looking for the next rock star, we don't want a ninja. Those words generally don't bring women to your company. Now, don't get me wrong, some women, they like the throwing stars, they want to be ninjas.
Well, and they don't just turn off women, they turn off quite a few types of people.
Anybody who's not a real alpha male, go-getter type of personality. Now me, I would totally respond to the ninja rock star thing, but not everybody will. And there are articles out there that talk about the gender bias in writing job descriptions and how to work around those and the difference in language and some choices that you could use that don't sound so aggressive.
Awesome. Thank you.
Hey, Ricky, this is completely unrelated, but I've had two thoughts that I kind of want to spit out. One is, if you want to see other women in tech, you need to be visible. And my personal feeling is, please stop giving me awards because I don't like standing on that stage. But I go up and I stand on that stage and I'm smiling and I am graceful and gracious because it's something that I feel I need to do. So women, please stand out, shine. The other thing is completely not women, it's human beings. If there's a situation that you don't like, it's really important to take a step back and say, what do I actually want? Because there's a good chance that you cannot change that other person, but you can do something else that's going to make you happy, and it might be a step to the left before you get to your goal, but your emotional happiness makes you much happier in your job, so it's an important thing to do.
So I just want to echo your sentiment about getting up here and being heard. This is actually the first time I have been on stage at a conference except for introducing other people. And as I mentioned, I hate public speaking. But I feel very passionately about getting the younger generation so that we have a more diverse culture, because I see us going backwards at this point. I see us becoming more clicky and programmy, and that frightens me. So once again, power vacuum stepping in, I want to fix that.
Exactly my point with the second part.
Thank you. Another question?
Hi again. By the way, I really miss Ames. I don't want to offend you personally, but there is a cultural disrespect for management in all fields, whether it's technology, policing, education. You know, how do you get past that cultural bias against management when women get promoted to management careers without enough women coming behind them back to the front lines?
I have to say that I love my manager. And part of the reason that I love my manager is he still remembers his technical skills and he remembers what it's like to do the job. And I think that is, that's not just men or women, that's everybody. A lot of time managers get put in that position and they got there from being technical people, and maybe they're thrown into a bunch of management courses, they start drinking the Kool-Aid, and you can't talk to them anymore. So from a tech perspective, the managers need to, they need to remember the lingo and they need to remember what the job is like. So because a manager's job, in my opinion, is to help the employees get their job done. And some managers forget that. Not mine, thank God, but some.
So for me, it's all about the interpersonal relationships with the people who work for me and the people I work for. I know the names of their pets. I know the names of their children. I'm interested in their personal lives. I'm interested in their career development. When we have our one-on-ones and we talk about technical projects, I actually listen and I ask questions. Sometimes they're dumb questions, but the people who work for me don't think so because they understand that I personally am taking an interest in what they're doing and I want to understand it and I want to make sure that A, it's done right, because everybody technical wants to make sure things are done right, but also that they get the recognition for it and that it helps them along their path in life. One of my direct reports actually refers to our one-on-ones as his therapy session, and he finds it very helpful because, you know, just writing something up or talking on IRC or on IM or whatever your medium of choice is. I should preface this by saying I'm a remote manager. No one works in my living room except me. So we do all of our conversations over video and IRC and stuff like that. And it's very important to have that sort of pseudo FaceTime and discussion with the people who work for you to make sure that they know that you're engaged in their career.
Hi. During some of yesterday's talks, there seemed to be some kind of general consensus about the bastard operator from hell disappearing in the next few years. I hope in the next 3-4 years, but maybe it will take some longer. Do you A, also think they're going to disappear? And B, do you think it will make it easier for women to be in IT, in operations?
I don't think assholes will disappear, no.
And it's not any harder for women to be in IT today than it's actually as much easier today than it ever has been, because you can learn at home. You don't even have to go into some, you know, classroom that's uncomfortable to you. So it's regrettable that society is not encouraging that. However, the numbers are definitely showing, the numbers are dropping. So that's on each of us to encourage the females that we have influence over, whether it's, you know, the children of friends, our own children, other young people, where if we're volunteering at a local school or local school system. But as a society, the trend is definitely not encouraging women to move into technology, but to move into the more glamorous looking kinds of careers.
So I have a secret confession. I love the bastard operator from hell. When I started out in system administration, I remembered when Simon started writing those, and I was on BoffNet and I was on ASR, and I complained along with all the rest of the system administrators. And it was an age thing. I realized as I got older that the way to be successful and the way to get your stuff done the way you wanted it to get done was not to be controversial all the time, was not to stuff the bodies under the raised flooring. Because eventually they begin to smell and it comes back to haunt you. And when I look at the sort of younger administrators coming up today, I do the same thing that someone did to me. I take them aside and I say, you know what? I like movies where people get murdered too, but I don't go out and murder people. So it's great to have these stories and this shared culture when we joke about hiding bodies under the raised flooring. But we don't do that in the real world because that doesn't benefit us.
Okay, we have time to let Deirdre respond to that, and then we have one more questioner behind you, and we can carry on this conversation tonight, though, at 8 o'clock in our BOF, so feel free to join us. We'd love to see everybody there. So what did you want to add?
No, it's actually not about the bastard operators from hell, but I was just going to say those who are interested in helping women in STEM, if you're not aware of it already, there's a great project out of the UK called Code Club, which is an after-school coding club for middle school age kids, and it's getting a lot of girls in. And you can start a local chapter at your school or your, you know, any school in your local area. They need technical people to help lead these things. I'm told it's a lot of fun, so I'd encourage people to have a look at that.
So you mentioned earlier about being open to going up and accepting those awards, but how do you keep that grounded in reality so it doesn't become kind of a figurehead or a token situation, so that you're actually doing this as a role model instead of just, hey, look, we've got a woman who's doing sysadmin work.
that's kind of up to the managers or whoever's voting. In my company, we have a peer award program where all the people in the company can submit and vote for whoever they think should win. And it's the same people typically year after year because they're fantastic. But it's, I don't think any of us is getting an award because we're a minority or a woman or, you know, some subcategory. It's because our peers are grateful that we helped them do something. And could you give me an example of what you were talking about?
All right, so maybe it's because I'm in academia. So you sometimes get this feeling that they're asking you to go out and do high school outreach because, hey, you're a woman in an engineering department. Yeah. Why don't you go out and talk to the high school students? Not because you're doing cybersecurity, not because you're working on this networking tool. But, you know, that's, you get kind of that impression coming from the administration sometimes.
I'm not in academia, and I have not had that feeling before, but I'm pretty sure my response would be to go do the hell out of that job and be good regardless of their expectation.
Thanks.
And tell them about doing cybersecurity and networking, not about being a woman.
Yeah,
I think that's an important thing, is that we don't have to go and talk about what it's like to be a woman in the field. We can talk about the cool things we're doing, you know, and that's much more compelling argument to come join the field.
But by the way, you are a woman in engineering. Rock it.
Thank you.
Okay, I want to thank everybody for coming. This has been a really interesting discussion. I really appreciate everybody's input, and hopefully we'll see you at the BOF tonight and at the party.